Well, great. Well, it's been a great session today. Thank you, Stella, for the invite into the organizing committee. I really appreciate that. Something that I have a lot of passion about is agronomic systems for all farmers around the world, and that's really what I'm going to talk about today is looking at some of the key components, especially as we look at smallholder farmers. They're going to help improve yields for them around the world and kind of tying them all together into an integrated system. You know, I would say when I personally became interested, prior to 2009, I was mainly working in North America. I hadn't started working around the world yet. Since then, I have been working around the world, and this is one of the one of the transformational things for me personally is, our CEO at Monsanto made this aspirational declaration that, you know, the population is increasing. It's going to exceed 9 billion by 2030 to 2050. And we need to figure out ways to double the food production by that time frame. And so it was kind of like a challenge to our organization, but he wants us to help produce more, but to do it with less resources per unit output and to help improve farmers' lives and the communities they live in around the world. That was the challenge, and that's kind of the genesis for my passion of agriculture around the world. So today, you know, really what I'd like to talk about is bringing in new innovations from around the world that all farmers can benefit from. So we'll look at some components that add value. Some of these things have been covered by other speakers, but I want to tie these things together and kind of, when you look at it from an industry perspective, what are the things that can really add value for smallholder farmers? You know, I'll be presenting things that were maybe aspirational, but I think you'll see at the core there are things that farmers all around the world can benefit from. So you've seen versions of this slide. This is from South Africa and really just shows the significant yield gap, anywhere from 2 to 4 metric tons per hectare in yield difference when you compare smallholder farmers in red with largeholder farmers in blue. And obviously, or maybe it's obvious, you know, sometimes even the genetics are not that different. Jonathan indicated there's a lot of reasons, up to 29% of the yield can be from other reasons, and I'll talk about that a bit. But on the right side, it's also interesting to me, you know, it gives it a different perspective when you look at the amount of grain produced in South Africa, and all that in the blue is what's produced by largeholder farmers or anybody basically over 2 hectares. And the little bit on top in orange is what the smallholder farmers are producing. And keep in mind, you know, I don't know how many of you are familiar with South Africa, but all that little orange is white corn, and that's food. And the blue corn is a combination of both food corn and feed corn. So to me, this just gives good perspective on that disparity, and really my goal is to try and diminish that disparity, and I think that's the goal of a lot of us in this room. Oops, sorry about that. So we've seen a lot of system slides. This is just kind of looks at a system from the Philippines, and my main point here is there's a lot of components to the system. Many of them are manual. I chose the Philippines because it's a little bit of a hybrid. They're advancing in what they're doing. They're advancing their yields. They're using more modern technology. But at the end of the day, much of it is still manual operation and involves either a person or a person with livestock to help deliver that yield at the end of the day. So kind of how I chose to break this down is look at the individual components of the system first. And many of the speakers talked about these components. And kind of how I framed this up is going from left to right on this table is the order of the decision, and then going top or bottom to top, it increases the cost, or the cost increases for that particular component. So this is really looking at it from the farmer's perspective. So, you know, certainly a baseline components, they want to start out with high quality seed that has a good capacity to germinate and hopefully has some yield potential. And then the other thing that I would say is very important is the uniform seed placement, both, you know, the depth, the row spacing, and then adding some basic fertility that usually animal manure if they have it. And then probably the thing that I noticed, and many of you that traveled to Africa probably noticed, is, you know, the timely management of weeds and maybe insects, but especially weeds. Often you go out there and even though the farmer's doing their best, the family's doing their best to manage weeds, they get out of control, and that's one of the significant decreases for maize production. And then if you go up the chart here, you see that for intermediate components, now moving to a hybrid seed is going to increase the yield potential. Maybe you add a little bit more drought resistance or native disease resistance, because usually when you're breeding or you're testing for genetics and developing an area, it's going to come for sure with some drought tolerance, especially as we're talking about sub-Saharan Africa, and hopefully you can also bring some native disease resistance in that as well. And then hopefully if the farmer has the means, you know, this is all is if the farmer has the means, they also would have pesticides to use to help manage their field. And then I'm moving on up the scale, and I'll talk about some of these other things here in the next slide as well. So now I'm looking at this a little bit differently, looking at kind of the return on investment, you know, looking at it more from how an industry sees things and, you know, in conjunction with the farmer, because it's never in isolation. We build hopefully what the farmers are requesting that they need. And so the yellow arrows, if you will, here have moved in position or are new arrows. And so basically, you're now looking at the baseline components where you're building it off of a hybrid instead of maybe an open pollinated variety. And of course, it's high quality seed. But hopefully, because that genetics has been bred for that area or is tested in that area, you now have some disease resistance or drought tolerance built into it. Then you have some of the same decisions. The farmer has some of the same decisions. When you move up to the next level, now, you know, probably this farmer, you know, is making a little more money. They're having a more consistent or higher yield, and they have access to maybe use more pesticides. Maybe they'll want to consider more of an optimum plant populations, which in some cases is planting more seed. In other cases, it's probably planting less. You know, it depends if how well they know the field and how well they know their agronomic system. And then you start to introduce things like cover crops. Now, cover crops are becoming more favorable all throughout agriculture, but they've been used for many years already in some parts of sub-Saharan Africa, growing dry beans within their maize, for example, and it helps with the soil, and it helps with weed management and so forth. So this is a slightly different way of looking at it, but I think the core part of this is built on this on the seed, in the seed, around the seed. And if maybe the farmer can afford these other things, but it's really about developing that agronomic system as it is built around that seed. And so I just want to go briefly through some of these things. We've touched on them, but certainly hybridization is a component that is absolutely critical to establishing that yield potential. You know, there's a big disparity between what the yield potential is and what a lot of farmers achieve, but that's what we're trying to bridge here with these components and the integrated system. You know, likewise, when we do our testing as a company or as a multinational, we're using high-tech technology and mechanization. And even though that's not what the farmer uses, it gives us the best chance to standardize and you know, give us a uniform data set, collect data from many locations, and gives us the best chance to produce the hybrids that will perform best for the farmer, even though they're growing under very different situations. We just talked about maize lethal necrosis, but you know, especially in some parts of Africa, this is a critical disease, and having resistance to it is almost necessary to produce corn, to produce maize. And so, you know, here's an example of some new genetics that we're bringing, DKC777, that you can see performs very well compared to some of our other DK hybrids. And basically, the difference here is having ears and not having ears, but it's very night and day difference if this disease is present. If you have the resistance, the plants survive. If not, there's not much left and not much productivity. So disease resistance is a core part, as well as germplasm improvement. And then along with that often comes the drought tolerance, just based on where that germplasm has been selected or tested or developed. You know, you have this built in as a core part that helps deliver that yield potential. We talked about seed placement. That is absolutely critical, and it's one of the things I notice often, maybe many of you do when you travel to Africa. There's often seeds that are plants that are different heights, and they're not in a row. And what happens is, if you remember for all of our training, a plant out of place is a weed, even if it's a corn plant. And if they're not the same development stage, they start competing against each other, and you start losing yield potential. So, you know, as mechanization becomes available, hopefully we can have better seed placement, seed depth, seed spacing within the row and between the rows. All these things come together to help. We had a talk on the importance of fertility, and I think this slide summarizes it well. Fertility, whether it's nitrogen or other fertility, is absolutely critical to delivering the yield potential, and is probably the most important factor outside of the genetic potential in some areas. The other thing is the timely weed control, and I just really want to show this. I know I talked about it, but I want to show this picture on the right because it's one of my most, interesting pictures out of my collection. It was a amaranthus species that was 3 meters tall in the middle of one of our research plots. And so it was 6 or 7 centimeters in diameter at the base, just to give you an idea. This was a serious plant, but it also was a food source, so you have to keep that in mind. This is a plant that they eat the leaves off of it as part of their diet. But more in this case, it's more, I guess, more about education about where you plant that or let that plant grow, so it doesn't impact your yield in your cornfields. But certainly, all that competition for water, nutrient, lights is going to impact the yield potential. Judicious use of pesticides. I had to put this in there as an entomologist. Unfortunately, Spadoptera frugiperda, the fall ringworm, has invaded Africa, and it's now found in almost every country within Africa. And certainly, insecticides and other tools need to be used to help manage this pest. This pest has up to 8 generations per year. It's probably the single most devastating pest of corn. And, we need to work together as a collective to try and find good solutions for the farmers there. And then optimum plant populations. This is just an example, again, making sure the row spacing and the plant populations are well understood. And that varies under different environmental conditions. But all these things, again, come together to help optimize the yield. This is the example I gave you with the dry bean planted within the maize in Kenya. Very common practice. My colleague said over 70% of farmers, small farmers in Kenya, utilize this practice to help improve the soil health and manage weeds, as well as producing another food source. And, certainly biotech has its place. And certainly I think if you look at this problem that we're having in Africa, my opinion is if this pest problem does not drive biotech, I'm not sure what will drive biotech in Africa. I mean, this pest is that devastating. We have tools available that we know work really well in concert with other IPM tools. And so that's something very serious that we need to consider as part of the system. My colleague Jonathan talked about FarmRise, but it's a great tool for communicating agronomic information, and it's not specific to DeKalb. It's just a broad way to communicate information to farmers. We're launching it in India, but we hope to have it in other places in Asia in the not too distant future. Because if you don't have access to timely agronomic information, you're going to be limited in your productivity. So now, kind of tying this all together and how we test it. We test it, starting out more than 3 years before we commercialize, but building up from the top, 3 years out, 2 years out, 1 year out, in commercial. And so we try and pinpoint using the inbreds to create the hybrids and then start testing those hybrids to see how they fit a particular geography. And then we also start looking at, do they have some disease resistance or drought tolerance? We start looking at different populations. This isn't always in the same study. Often it's in more of what we call a component kind of approach that I'll talk about in a little bit. But as we move through the progressive years, getting closer to commercialization, we're starting to lock in what is the integrated system we would recommend. As you can see, all of this is based on the seed. It's either the germplasm itself, it's in the seed, and then you start looking at the populations and spacing, you start looking at the fertility, and then we start testing going from breeding conditions more to a farmer condition. So that means sometimes going from small plots to strip plots, or sometimes it's paired comparisons, a lot of different ways to look at this. But the idea is, by the time we launch, we have a recommendation of a specific genetics. We know what disease it has resistance to or not, maybe the drought tolerance capabilities, and we have an understanding of how to place it in farmers' field and what populations and so forth. So this is the staged approach that we typically use as we're tying everything together. We're first of all testing the various components, whether it's germplasm by itself, crop protection, seed of flight solutions, and so forth. And then we bring that together into a small plot system environment where we have replication, and we do the analysis by that location across locations. And then that level three, is that year prior, we're taking it to commercial fields and pulling it all together. So really showing you how we're integrating everything to offer to the small farmer. Not all these things work for all farmers. When you say small farmers, you have some farmers that are very advanced and small farmers and some that are pretty basic. But some of these bottom level things that I talked about are certainly things that we want to think about when we integrate a system together for smallholder farmers. And what does that look like when it all comes together? My role is to look out within the areas that I work in, Europe, Africa, and Asia, and see what the future agronomic system can be for these world areas. It's not absolutely always this. but this gives our team a goal to try and achieve, to deliver all of these technologies or some of these technologies based on the needs of that local smallholder farmer. And so I would just close in saying, you know, there is a need to bring these innovations and integrate these innovations into systems for smallholder farmers. You know, we feel that that's the best approach to deliver more value, not only for smallholder farmers, but farmers all over the world. And we're hoping, you know, that by doing this, we can achieve that goal of helping all growers produce a sustainable food source, hopefully improve their capability to produce food, and hopefully make a little extra money beyond what they're normally used to. So by doing this, it'll produce more and it'll conserve more because we're producing more output per unit of input, and then we're improving the lives where these farmers live in the communities where they live in as well. So thank you. With that, I'll close and answer any questions, Stella. Yes.
Do you also look at sort of the economics for the smallholder farmer? Because it's like, I'm just wondering, so is success to have these smallholders all look like an Iowa farm?
No.
At some point it's like, yeah, okay, I have to buy a bunch of new stuff to get some higher yields and so on, but if my bottom line isn't...
Right, and that's a good question, and that's why I...
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, so the question is, do we want all farmers around the world essentially to be to look like an Iowa farmer, to be operating at a very high level? You know, we want farmers to be as productive as they can be in their system. We don't want all farmers to look like Iowa farmers. Then that's why, you know, if you look at the chart that I present, I really wanted to focus on the things that were minimal investment. Certainly going from open pollinated to hybrid, that's an additional investment. But a lot of those other things are just improvements we can do in the agronomic system that hopefully takes them up to the next level where they could afford some of those other inputs at some later point in time. But no, it varies depending on the smallholder farmers we're talking about here and their capabilities. But we want to try and bring technology and integrated systems that's appropriate for them, you know, as much as possible. Yeah. Yes?
Let me be a bit of a devil's advocate.
Sure.
A lot of smallholder African farmers and smallholder Asian farmers and Latin American farmers know about the inputs. They've used them, they've tried them. They try them on specialty crops, but they don't use them on their staple crops.
Yeah.
Why? Because the other components of the system, other speakers have mentioned, the markets, the policy and so on, are not there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can carry on focusing on technology, but it's not going to make it go.
Yeah.
We've got to find out how to develop a whole innovation system, platform, whatever you want to call it, that brings all of this together. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with you, sir. You know, I think it's really important that we, you know, we're not just focusing on producing more without helping understand what the markets can be and having tools so farmers can access those markets and access all the different parts of the system. You know, production is just one part of the system, but I agree that there needs to be improvements in the overall marketing capability and creating a need at a local level. But I would say, you know, even though you know we produce a lot more grain than we need right now, but the reality is that grain and that food is not getting to where it needs to be. So, I mean, I agree. If it's part of our responsibility, if we're going to be developing these technologies that bring more value, that bring more productivity, that we also find ways to help create markets for them. So, and the work to do there. Yeah.
Thank you all so much.